You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, December 15th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, or Digby, as you may know her. Also on the program, I think, Judy Gold, or Judy Gold, as you may know her. Meanwhile, now that little Marco is aside, are Republicans about to close the tax deal? And not wholly unrelated, is Trump about to fire Mueller? Is Paul Ryan about to retire? Is Rex Tillerson freelancing and also on his way out? Is Lindsey Graham hitting the links just to grease the skids with war with North Korea?
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, state AGs will be suing to stop net neutrality rollback. Can they prevail? Well, not if Trump has all his judicial nominees to that circuit court in D.C., but there looks like one who might not be making it. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. There's a report out there. Well, I shouldn't say it's necessarily a report. There is a piece in Politico that suggests that Paul Ryan may be resigning. He may be resigning after 2018 to go home and spend more time with his kids. I am, color me dubious. Color me dubious. I think he's probably, this is more of his reluctant, I'm reluctant, but if nominated, I will. Type of BS. But he could very well be on the way out. He may actually even, who knows? Who knows what's going to, the next couple of weeks are going to bring with Paul Ryan and with the Republicans at large. I mean, we're going to be talking about that with Digby. But let's hear Paul Ryan yesterday. Republicans, ostensibly, he's out there taking credit for the deal reached on the tax bill. There was a little bit of a hiccup. Marco Rubio wanted slightly more in terms of refundable tax credits. To his credit, Rubio's credit, it's for people who are on the lower half of the income spectrum. But here is Paul Ryan, and you know his big thing, obviously, has always been to cut Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. And here he is laying the groundwork for that. Because once the tax cuts go through, then all of a sudden they're going to realize, like, oh my God, this really increases the deficit. And oh gosh, we're going to have to cut Social Security. And the reason why we have to cut Social Security is because of the, there's a lot more retired people than there are workers. So we're going to pretend that increases in productivity mean nothing. We're going to pretend all that. But here is Paul Ryan. Here's his soft and fuzzy way of saying we're going to be cutting your retirement benefits.
People. This is going to be the new economic challenge for America. People. Baby boomers are retiring. I did my part, but you know, we need to have higher birth rates in this country. Meaning, baby boomers are retiring, and we have fewer people following them in the workforce. We have something like a 90% increase in the retirement population in America, but only a 19% increase in the working population in America. So what do we have to do? Be smarter, more efficient, more technology, still going to need more people. And when we have tens of millions of people right here in this country falling short of their potential, not working, not looking for a job, or not in school getting a skill to get a job, that's a problem.
Pause it. Okay. Now, wait a second. Is that all there is? Okay. So let's try and just unpack the lies, layered on top of lies, layered on top of smears. Let's just work backwards, shall we? If there was all these jobs out there, they're just waiting. These highly skilled jobs, or these maybe mid-level skilled jobs. If there were all these jobs out there that people couldn't fill, we would see wages increase, which we haven't seen, particularly relative to productivity, even remotely close over the past 30 years. Going back a little bit even further, this whole notion of him saying, we don't have enough people. The U.S. retirement age 65 plus population in 2016 was 50 million, about approximately 50 million. You're talking about a 90% increase that resulted in that number. Then the actual population increase required would be about 23 million people. U.S. working age population, 2016, 192 million people, approximately. Ryan claimed that the increase that resulted in that number is 19%. That would be 31 million people, somewhere around there. So in other words, there are more people who entered the job force than entered into the retirement population. The idea, and we're also talking about people who are more productive. If you are worried about Social Security running out, the issue is not we don't have enough people. The issue is we're not capturing as much of the income generated by the American workforce that we used to. And why is that? It is because of the cap. The cap is at about 118,000, maybe it's 120,000 now. Above that, we don't capture any of that income. Wealth inequality, income inequality is such now that we used to capture 95% of income generated, and now we capture about 9 percentage points less than that. So all we need to do is raise the cap. We don't need to have more babies. And if we really needed more people, then you should also look to your left and look to your right and look at all the Republicans who are trying now to drive immigrants out of the country. Not just so-called illegals, not undocumented immigrants. They're now trying to drive immigrants out of the country. We'll get to that clip later.
He doesn't mean those people.
Oh, right. He just means we need people. More Irish Catholic babies. Mm. And so Paul Ryan continues to be full of crap, but he throws out a couple of percentages and then some type of moralizing about people having babies as some way of justifying cutting your retirement benefits. I hope he resigns. Good riddance.
I hope he loses in an utterly humiliating fashion. I still think there is no better... No one can put so many lies, so much disingenuousness, and actually sort of like soft voice, just disgusting sentiment in such a short period of time as him. There's no one better.
It's almost like people have fewer children when they don't know that they can provide for them. I mean, speaking as a millennial myself, like, I'm not going to bring a precious life in the world so you can grind it up into fucking nootropics for rich people. I'm sorry.
That's really not the kind of innovation-based can-do spirit that's going to grow the American economy. So it's very sad when you hear millennials don't want future potential children grind up into dust to produce nootropics for the wealthy. That's not how America got where it was.
Folks, speaking of nootropics, I still can't get I am still in my mind replaying those moments where I ate all of those Shari's berries. I still am. I still think
those
about it.
Those are your nootropics?
Well, it's just that because I was having such a stressful time, I just gave myself full license to eat as many as I want, and that's never happened to me
before. We witnessed it. We saw it.
Everybody,
definitely the read is better than the view.
People really watch out when I get a full license to eat as many chocolate-dipped strawberries as I can. And this holiday, you folks, my listeners, can get fresh and delicious Shari berries dipped in white milk and dark chocolatey goodness starting at $19.99 plus shipping and handling. Or when you double the berries for just $10 more, your gift will include a free keepsake dessert platter. That's two gifts in one. Folks, this is the time to get gifts for folks, and you know you don't want to stress yourself out. You're going to give them a gift that they love, and it's going to be easy for you. What more would you want? And Shari's Berries has more than just berries. They've added amazing new holiday treats like snowman brownie pops. That would be the one that would go over, I think, big time in my house for the kids. I'm not saying people should be sending my kids treats, although I wouldn't have a problem with that. Cheesecake Christmas trees and artisanal chocolate truffles. Huge, fresh, juicy berries topped with rich chocolate chips, chopped nuts, signature swizzles. You get to choose the delivery date, customer satisfaction, always number one, or your money back. Gifts arrive packaged in Shari Berry's signature gift box, no wrapping required. It's an incredible, unique gift that's perfect for sharing, though if they're like me, they won't want to. There's only one way to get this amazing $19.99 deal this holiday. Visit berries.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, enter my code CEDAR at checkout. Remember, when you double the berries for just $10 more, your gift will include a free keepsake dessert platter. That's berries, berries.com. Code CEDAR, SEDER. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Digby. Just a reminder, folks, you can support this program, and I want to say thank you again. You know, I'm just digging out, and I'm getting to your emails, but I want to say thank you again to all the folks who joined up, or donated, joined up, became members, supported this show, and myself in a myriad of different ways. So I want to thank all of you. It really is amazing. And as I sort of like regain my sleep and my bearing, I get a really good sense of just how much people really, really showed up to help us. So thank you again. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. I don't know. MR Holiday still may work today. I'm not sure, to get 30% off. Maybe yesterday. Maybe it's over. But check it out if you're hearing this on the 15th. And also, majorityreportkickback.com. If you've been using any links in the past to benefit this show, you need to renew those links. Can't be any more explicit than that, ladies and gentlemen, for reasons that we have mentioned in the past. All right, quick break. When we come back, Heather Pardon. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome back to this program Heather Parton, or as you may know her, from her Uber blog, Hullabaloo, Digby. Hello, Heather.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
I'm well. And I don't know. I'm still buoyed by the Alabama win, which I just realized like I had forgotten about it, anticipating what we were going to talk about. But let's start with Alabama. But it's a nice victory, but it may not have any sort of near-term relevance, particularly with the most sort of important legislation, I think, that's going to get passed in the next week or two. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, you tell me. We should be excited about Alabama, obviously, because it indicates that, you know, there's some good lessons there, but it's not going to bring us any immediate help.
Right. I mean, I've always felt that, you know, no matter what, from the day Trump, you know, the election day last year, that feeling of sort of overwhelming despair has been with me. Not because I didn't think that America could right this ship. I mean, it seemed to me it was always fairly a good bet that people were going to react very strongly in 2018 and that there would be a wave. I mean, this has been happening, by the way. I mean, that's kind of a pattern. 2006, 2010, you know, this is, we've been going back and forth like that, and I sort of expected that this would happen. I mean, I'm thrilled about Alabama because that's not a place I would have ever expected it to happen. You know
right.
what I mean? I mean, that was just wow. And I really did have, you know, maybe a 12-hour respite from my ongoing despair, just thinking about the fact that that really does portend a wave election in 2018, and maybe more of a substantial one than I thought. Maybe Democrats have a chance of taking the Senate. But, you know, having said that, the damage that could be done in 2 years by an unfit, unpredictable, cretinous, extremist administration, which we knew Donald Trump was going to be. If we were lucky enough to get through it with escaping a major war, much less enacting the Republican, wet dream of legislation, you know, we would be very lucky. So I have been assuming that they were going to pass something horrible. I mean, we got over the hump of the ACA repeal, but you know, keep in mind that the ACA repeal, despite the fact that they had been running on it and using it as a political cudgel, it really wasn't something that Republicans deep in their gut, you know, the people who care about that stuff, other than the fact that it had Obama attached to it.
Right.
It wasn't something they just really viscerally loathed. So, it's not all that surprising that they, quote, failed to get that done. They tried. They did what they could. That John McCain just wouldn't let them do it or whatever. But taxes, of course, I mean, this is their holy grail. So if they do get this thing passed, and it's possible that they won't, I mean, there's a lot of weird churning going on with it because it's the worst plan anybody, it's the worst piece of legislation anybody's ever put forward of this magnitude. And it's extremely unpopular, and they know there's going to be a wave. So, you know, I'm not totally giving up hope that somehow or another the thing will fall apart. But I have to say that if I had to lay down a bet, this is the one thing that I would have to guess these Republicans are going to get done, because taxes, you know, I mean, this is the big reward, right?
Right.
I mean, this is what they live for, basically. It's what they sat around at keggers in college dreaming of, this sick.
Well, to be fair, it was actually cutting Social Security, I think Medicare. Was it that Ryan said, or was it that it was a tax reform?
Well, I think it was actually Medicaid, now that I think about it, but it's all the same thing, isn't
right,
it?
Right, right. I mean, that's and that is the thing, is that once they do this, they're going to, it's not like they're going to go, okay, we're done. We're just going to wait until, the fall of 2018 before we do anything else. They're going to, at the very least, try and cut Medicare and Medicaid. Well, they'll be cutting Medicaid, frankly, in this bill, at least cutting people off the rolls in some fashion. And they're going to try and cut Social Security. Like you say, it's not a totally done deal. Next week is going to be a pretty crazy week in terms of what they have to do, right? I mean, they have to, assuming they come out with a deal today, which it sounds like they have, although I think there's still some numbers that they have to fix, right? Because if they just gave Rubio what he wanted, they have to, I don't know that they had any type of cushion to get rid of that revenue. They may be pulling back on how long the tax cuts last for middle
class. I had heard that, yeah.
That's what I heard as well. But
doesn't that figure? You know, maybe they could, you know, deport some, you know, poor people or something, but that's the only options they have in their minds.
So the plan is that they want to have a vote in the House and the Senate by next Wednesday. And they want to then get it to Trump's desk. They want to reach a funding agreement by Friday. I think that's next week. And then they have to get either a continuing resolution on the budget. They want to, and Democrats may say, like, we're not going to give you the vote to keep the government open unless you fix DACA. Or maybe some other immigration deal. So there's a lot of stuff that's supposed to happen next week, and I'll tell you there's no reason. I mean, obviously, like, they don't want Doug Jones to take a swipe at voting, right? Because Corker's a no, McCain is in the hospital. I think there's one other
Thad Cochran.
Thad Cochran is also ill. They don't know if maybe there might be a problem with, like, a Mike Lee or someone like that. Who knows? Maybe there'll be another senator stepping up and going, like, well, if you needed Rubio, then you need me too. And mm-hmm. I want something. I mean, we don't know. It's possible. But so Doug Jones could be relevant if he was seated, but it looks like they're trying to clear the decks. And then, frankly, I mean, it also sort of feels like maybe, I don't know if we want to go there yet, but it also sort of feels like maybe Donald Trump is getting ready to fire Mueller. And I would imagine if they're going to sequence these things, the sequence would be pass the tax cuts, then fire Mueller. And if I know that Donald Trump is going to fire Mueller, well, let's listen to this. I want to play this video, okay? And you tell me what you get from these. Here's Donald Trump before boarding Marine Number One to speak at the FBI graduation. This is clip number one. Trump is out in front of the White House, and here he is. Just listen to the way he's talking about this. It reminds me of the way he was talking before Comey was fired.
I want to interrupt you because the president's remarks on the White House.
We're going to rebuild the FBI. It'll be bigger and better than ever. But it is very sad when you look at those documents, and how they've done that is really, really disgraceful. And you have a lot of very angry people that are seeing it. It's a very sad thing to watch, I will tell you that. And I'm going today on behalf of the FBI, their new building. And you know, but when everybody, not me, when everybody, the level of anger at what they've been witnessing with respect to the FBI is certainly very sad.
Yeah, the level of anger, what they've been looking, yeah, not me, I'm not angry, but everybody else is, Digby.
I know, it's sad. It's very, very sad. It's just, it's the saddest thing I've ever seen. I mean, you know, come on. I think people are angry about what they've seen, but not that. I think he's got the anger part down, but I think watching these Republicans basically flag the federal law enforcement. I mean, you know, for people like you and me, Sam, I mean, we've had plenty of beefs with federal law enforcement. I'm no great, you know, I'm not someone who's going to sit here and be, you know, a big booster of the FBI or any of the other, federal policing authorities. I mean, they're often problematic, but that's because they are often very conservative. And in fact, during the campaign, we saw plenty of evidence of that. And often are very authoritarian in their worldview, which, Donald Trump is too. But in this case, what we're seeing is the Republicans just basically do a 180 and completely just go up against law enforcement. I have to say, I've got relatives who are Trump people, really hard people to deal with for me, but they're actually not comfortable with this. I mean, the opposite is true, at least in my personal circle, of what Donald Trump is saying, because going after the FBI, going after the CIA, going after, the Department of Justice, doesn't sit right with my relatives who are there. These are not, that's not how they think of those groups, kind of like the military, I mean, they're right. sort of sacred on a certain level. The FBI, you don't go after, even somebody like Joe Walsh on Twitter, that ex-congressman, he's very, very, very voluble on social media. Even he was kind of going, hey, we're going after the FBI now? That guy, he's as far right as it gets. So, Trump is playing with fire here. This is not necessarily, and, I'm sure his base, they'll follow him anywhere, right, and right over the cliff. But there are Republicans out there who are bound to feel uncomfortable with these attacks on the integrity of the system of justice, the rule of law, and specifically, the cops.
Well, but I guess my point is that's what leads me to believe he's going to fire Mueller, right? Because they're talking about, and they're bringing up Andrew McCabe, they're talking about these texts that came from two FBI investigators, which apparently also include them slagging Eric Holder and Chelsea Clinton and Bernie Sanders. It seems to me, right, like he's building a case, like there's so much anger about this that I had to do something. So I fired Mueller, and I fired Rod Rosenstein, and I fired McCabe, and I got rid of all three of them. They're all a big problem. And now we're going to stop criticizing the FBI. And it seems to me that if I was advising Donald Trump said to me, I'm firing these guys. As soon as the tax bill is signed, I'm firing these guys because, Mitch and Paul said, you can do what you want after I sign the tax bill. So I'm going to fire them. And if I was advising Donald Trump, I would say, well, the best time to do it is between Monday, the 26th or whatever the day is after Christmas and New Year's. And that's the best time to do it. Right. I mean, because theoretically that's going to be, everybody's going to be taking those times off. It's going to be the quietest news time, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems to me that, it wouldn't be surprising to see them do this at this point.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, that's clearly what they're building a case toward. This has been they were casting about for months trying to figure out the best way to go up against the special prosecutor, the best way to oppose the special prosecutor. And it's tough because Robert Mueller is a Republican, highly respected guy, war hero, all that stuff. I mean, he is, compared to every other special prosecutor we've ever had, he is like the stellar example of what you would want in a qualified, nonpartisan lawman. He's a Republican, but he's never played politics particularly. So, he was tough, and they cast about for a lot of stuff. And I think they ended up just throwing everything at the wall, and they're going to see what sticks. And one of the things that they are, and the point of all this is, of course, to discredit Mueller and his investigation, discredit the FBI, which set up the investigation, including the intelligence community. They want to discredit the whole Russia narrative, right? I mean, it's not enough just to say that Trump didn't specifically collude with the Russian government. Trump wants everyone to believe that it didn't happen.
Right.
So that's part of what they're doing, is trying to just discredit this whole idea around it. And in the middle of that, they're also throwing up a bunch of smoke about how Hillary Clinton is the real criminal here and we need to lock her up. And all of that is part of this, and it's setting up Donald Trump to A, fire Mueller, and B, pardon everybody, because the whole thing is so completely out of control, he just had to do something for the good of the country, right?
We have a clip of Trump talking about that there is absolutely, I just want to tell you right now, no collusion. And the real collusion was Hillary.
You'll have to make that determination. We're hoping for a very, let's put it this way. There is absolutely no collusion. That has been proven. When you look at the committees, whether it's the Senate or the House, everybody walked, my worst enemies, they walk out, they say, there is no collusion, but we'll continue to look. They're spending millions and millions of dollars. There is absolutely no collusion. I didn't make a phone call to Russia. I have nothing to do with Russia. Everybody knows it. That was a Democrat hoax. It was an excuse for losing the election. And it should have never been this way, where they spent all these millions of dollars. So now even the Democrats admit there's no collusion. There is no collusion. That's it. And we got to get back to running a country. What we have found, and what they have found, after looking at this really scam, is they found tremendous, whatever you want to call it, you're going to have to make up your own determination. But they found tremendous things on the other side. When you look at the Hillary Clinton investigation, it was, you know, I've been saying it for a long time. That was a rigged system, folks. That was a rigged system. When you look at what they did with respect to the Hillary Clinton investigation, it was rigged. And there's never been anything like it in this country that we've ever found before.
Sometimes you just see his struggles with some of the most basic aspects of the human, I mean, the English language. And it's, and well, human things too, I would imagine. But there's no collusion. I don't know if you're aware of that. There was no collusion. No
apparently,
collusion.
Except there was.
No collusion. And then Hillary, some things on the other side.
Thanks.
But we got to get back to the, I mean, the his whole tone with this just, again, feels like they're about to make some type of move.
It feels as though he's come to some resolution in his own mind. You know, you do get that sense, which is, I have, you know, like I said before, I've got to do this for the good of the country. I've got to say, I've got to fix the FBI. I've got to fix the intelligence agency. We've got to get rid of Mueller. He is tainted. They've got all these people who were covering for Hillary. I mean, the overarching narrative here that they have finally gotten, and, you know, you can see where Trump gets this. It's purely from Fox News. They have been absolutely, they've written it down as a script, and they're just repeating it, you know, on a loop, which is that the FBI covered for Hillary Clinton because they wanted her to be the president, and which is bizarre considering the way they behaved, and they wanted her to be president, and that they have had it in for Donald Trump from the beginning, and they made this whole thing up, and that this entire narrative is they believe now is backwards. Hillary Clinton is the criminal. Donald Trump is the you know, the tainted, accused here, the unjustly accused, and they have to right this. And Trump, as president, has no choice but to do this and spare the American people any more of this nonsense. He's got to fix things. And it seems to me, I think you're right. You listen to him talk, and he really seems, you know, there's a certain energy behind his grasping of words there that it indicates that he may have come to a conclusion. He doesn't seem to be avoiding it. He's actually coming out there and talking about it. He seems energized by it, and I think that you may be right. And of course, doing it over the holiday between Christmas and New Year's would make a lot of sense. And in fact, he wouldn't be the first one. George H.W. Bush, he pardoned five people, including Casper Weinberger, on Christmas Eve. Because he was on his way out the door.
Right.
I mean, Trump's going to have to face the repercussions here. And they could be extreme. Although, I have to admit, you know, I've seen no movement on the part of Republicans, really, anywhere. that any of this is disturbing them. In fact, more of them are jumping on board every day. Look at Lindsey Graham.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not clear that there's going to be any fallout from him firing Mueller. Now he might have to, you know, I guess fire Rod Rosenstein and then Mueller. Now maybe Mueller, I would imagine, Mueller has set up the investigation in some fashion. There has to be some type of failsafe, right? Like Robert Mueller can't be ignorant of the idea that Donald Trump is going to fire him. He must know that this is like on the first week. I would imagine they were like, okay, you know, here's where we're going to leave all the documents that we need other people to see. Or, I mean, honestly, it must have
come
something. And right. And so what happens? I mean, if he does over the next 2 weeks, we see a tax bill getting passed and then he ends up firing him. Do you have a sense that Republicans have set themselves up in any way to sort of like to respond to this? I don't think so. And frankly, no. I don't know that we've even seen Democrats really set themselves up in response to this.
Well, you know, I'm sure they'll come out before the cameras and say, this is terrible, you know, it's a blight on the rule of law, and he's a criminal, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure they'll say all that. But I don't know what anybody's planning to do about it. If anything, everybody's being very cautious about using the word impeachment. And I have to say, I may be alone in this, but in this case, I think that it's a mistake to run away from that. And the reason is this: if you look back at the Clinton, investigations and the way that impeachment came down, you know, Bob Barr had introduced articles of impeachment months before the Monica Lewinsky scandal hit. What they had been preparing for, they had paperwork ready to do it. Now, granted, Democrats are not in the majority. They don't have the actual ability to do this, but it's not that long, right? I mean, we've got less than a year now until a moment when Democrats could do it. Now, it's true that they may not be able to convict Donald Trump in the Senate if they were able to impeach him in the House. But all of that is, you know, there's a good reason to do it just on the merits, right? I mean, what is happening here on every level, from the emoluments and the corruption to the, you know, I mean, the articles of impeachment will be a mile high if they decide to actually do it. The Democrats should be preparing for this and preparing people to think about this in their heads and to understand where this kind of thing is heading.
But they're not going to.
Especially if he fires Mueller.
They're not going to impeach him. They're not going to impeach him. There's no way Democrats are going to impeach him. Because if in 2019 they may start the hearings, they may talk about it, but they don't want to impeach this guy in 2019, right? They want him to be running in 2020. If he's impeachable, they want to run against him. They're not going to impeach him.
I think they're worried that probably that he's, you know, he won't run in 2020. They'll find some reason for him. Of course, he may not go along with that, but I doubt the party's looking forward to it.
I mean, I guess that's possible. And then I guess it would be Mike Pence, and it would just be an open an open primary at that point in 2020. But I would imagine, I mean, I guess he would have to go out willingly, but there's not going to be any impeachment. I mean, that's the thing, is that there doesn't seem to be any mechanism that anybody has even contemplated. Like, there's no attempt by Democrats to get any Republicans. Well, maybe there's been attempts. That's not fair. But there doesn't seem to be any Republicans who are going out there saying, like, you better not do it or we're going to do something, right? Like, there's
this is interesting because they did do that back in the summer.
Yes.
You know, it was, I think it was Tom Tillis and Graham. And then there was one by Cory Booker and I think it was Corker. There were a couple of proposals to pass legislation in the Senate to stop, you know, that would preclude Trump firing Mueller, that would protect Mueller. And they all said, hey, he better not do it. No way. You know, they were not going to do it. What happened to that? I'm not seeing that anywhere. And I don't think, you know, look, Graham now has become like, you know, Trump's major domo. He's treating him like, yeah. You know, the way that the Chinese and the Saudi Arabians treated him when he was on his foreign visit, you know, just kind of overly dramatic, obsequious flattery. I mean, maybe he thinks that's going to get him somewhere. I don't know. But in any case, he's certainly not out there saying, well, you better not fire Mueller. Nobody is. And that's a change. And, you know, I don't know where that's coming from. It's not as if, I mean, do these senators have to be looking at something like Alabama, right? And granted, none of them are probably Judge Roy Moore.
Right.
But they have to be wondering, this is looking like a real wave. I mean, a big one, maybe the biggest one we've seen in this series of waves over the last few years. And they have to be wondering whether or not it makes good sense for them to stick with this guy. And this seems like an easy one. You know, I mean, look, there was one bipartisan, you know, piece of legislation that was passed this year, and that was on those Russian sanctions, and it was like 98-2 in the Senate, overwhelmingly passed in the House, where they demanded that Trump enact those sanctions, and he was actually going to veto it, and they had to talk him out of it, going, hey, you know, Trump, look, they've got the override numbers, okay, so it's not going to do you any good. He probably didn't know that. But this was, you know, there was some energy that was there, during the summer, of congressional pushback on this. And, you know, like you, I'm kind of seeing that dissipating.
Totally.
Whatever was there, and it wasn't much, but, you know, there was something there. It's kind of like fading away. I mean, we're going to watch Jeff Flake and, you know, vote for the tax bill.
Right.
You know, I think, you know.
And what's weird is we're seeing Trump's numbers drop, but I think what we're witnessing are, you know, Trump's numbers dropping in every blue and purple area in the country. But in the red areas, I think, like, you know, I imagine he's probably holding still, and that's what's driving this, right? Like, you know, I think the Republicans, those people came out with the idea that we're going to protect Mueller from Trump. Over the summer, just thought that, oh, we've got to get on top of this. But I think as time goes on, they're like, you know what? We're not going to get, we don't have another option. Like, I mean, if they're looking at a wave type of scenario where they're going to lose, the first thing that they want to do probably is just stick with their base and try and ride it out. And Donald Trump represents their base, period.
Well, he does. I mean, you know, it's astonishing. Even that is starting to be, you know, that sort of grinding away at that a little bit. There are some signs of defections among his base, a little bit. Not much, but, you know, when you look at the latest polling, like I think in the new Monmouth poll, he's down to like 32%. And that has dug into the actual what we thought of as the hardcore base of Donald Trump. And who knows over the next year how that's going to go.
Right.
Because, you know, but this is why it's a bad idea for a Jeff Flake to actually empower Trump by passing this bill. He's not running again anyway. And what he could do is obstruct that bill, stand up and say, I'm not going to, you know, Donald Trump is a blight on humanity, and I am not going to pass anything. As long as he's president, I'm not going to vote for it because, or whatever, he can say whatever he wants there, but just don't do it. Because if Trump looks like a winner, that empowers his base. It's part of what's digging away at these people, I think, is the fact that Trump's turning out to not be able to do anything. And that is, you know, they don't like losers. They don't want him to be a loser. They want, you know, he was the big winner. So that particular dynamic, somebody like Jeff Flake could make a big difference just by denying Trump this win. And when you give him this win, what that does is that emboldens him to do crazy stuff like fire Mueller. Look at me. I'm the big winner here. The market, the economy. I got this big tax bill. Look at me. I can do anything I want. So in a way, you know, somebody like Flake refusing to kind of, you know, do his duty here is empowering Trump in which may end up sort of keeping that base with him. I mean, nobody else. The bill is tremendously unpopular, so it's not like it's going to buy him anything with anybody other than his base. But that winning thing is very important to those people. He's a man who can get things done. He's a businessman, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I mean, this dynamic is complicated, and it's just scary that this is the man who's in charge. And we haven't even talked about the foreign policy implications and what's going on with North Korea right now, with basically they're telling Tillerson to, you know, you're out, buddy. You don't speak for us anymore, because he was in there saying we've got talks without preconditions. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, I mean, that's the big, you know, sword of Damocles, nuclear sword of Damocles that's hanging over our heads.
Well, we had this week, Tillerson, just to remind people, Tillerson came out and said, you know, we're going to talk without preconditions. And then the White House said, oh, no, that's not true. And there was a piece today where the White House, you know, Tillerson still hasn't gotten the message. Hopefully he'll leave. And then Lindsey Graham was apparently, I think he did an interview with the Atlantic yesterday. If nothing changes, Trump's going to have to use the military option because time is running out. Well, what's going to change in North Korea?
I have no idea. I guess total capitulation. Is that what they're saying? You know, just basically he's got to come crawling on his, Kim Jong-un has to come crawling on his hands and knees and beg Donald Trump for forgiveness and just say, you know, I'm abdicating my job here. You won. Is that a cry uncle? Is that what this is about? I don't even understand it. It just makes no sense to me other than that.
And he says, there is no surgical strike option. I am literally, listen to what he says, I am literally willing to put hundreds of thousands of people at risk, knowing that millions and millions of people will be at risk if we don't stop North Korea. I'm not taking anything off the table to avoid a war, Graham said, saying that he'd be open to Tillerson talking without conditions to North Korea. When they write the history of the times, I don't want them to say, hey, Lindsey Graham wouldn't even talk to that guy. And,
well, they won't be writing the history because we'll all be dead.
Well,
so
I mean,
there won't be anybody to write it.
Well, I mean, when you start to say, like, I want them to look back and know that I did everything possible before what? Wait a second. Wait, what? I mean, he is saying, like, I want to get my bases covered for when this gets written up. And
I'm the good guy here. Yeah.
And I don't know if, you know, Lindsey Graham has some type of promise to become the Secretary of State. I was reading today that Trump really likes it. Mike Pompeo is so sweet to me. And he loves that guy being at the CIA and loves supposedly his daily briefings. We also know that there's been leaks by CIA, at least people inside the CIA, saying that Pompeo is like running interference for Trump. In some respect. So that's why Trump wants to keep him there. If Lindsey Graham thinks he's next in line for this job and he wants history to look back, you know, on whatever's going to happen next, right? Like right now, in the absence of a war with North Korea, nobody's going to look back and say, hey, Lindsey Graham wasn't willing to talk to somebody. Like, it's just a weird,
Okay, good for you, Lindsey.
Well, nobody's going to say that unless Lindsey Graham anticipates something that's going to happen.
Right.
There's a lot of just foreboding, I think, that I'm just getting this creepy feeling today. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just
tired. There's just this sense that something's happening. And it's funny because this week I went to hear Daniel Ellsberg talk about his new book, which is about nuclear war. And he talked about the Cuban Missile Crisis. He was involved, you know, he was kind of on the inside. You know, he was originally a nuclear war analyst. He, you know, the Pentagon Papers were just sort of, it became what he was known for, but that was not his field.
Right.
His field was nuclear, you know, strategy. And, you know, he talked a lot about how close we came, much closer than I had ever realized. There's a lot of anecdotes in the book, apparently, about, you know, it was basically sheer luck in the Cuban Missile Crisis that kept us from incinerating the world. But he talked about North Korea and said, you know, you have no idea that there is not enough firepower between, you know, that North Korea itself has to do the worst case scenario, which is a couple of billion people dead and nuclear winter, which will kill most of the people kill most of everything on the planet because of the environmental catastrophe that follows a major nuclear incident like this. But it will be tens of millions of people dead, tens of millions of people dead. And what he said he was afraid of is that people are telling Donald Trump, don't worry, it won't be as bad as a full-out nuclear war. It won't be that bad. Just a few million. It's like right out of Strangelove, right?
Right.
It's right. Don't. What we won't get. I'm not saying we won't get our hair muffs. 20-30 million tops. You know, that's what is the potential level of conversation that's happening around this issue, and it's absolutely terrifying. And you know, Donald Trump is not intellectually capable of. You know, very few people are really. I mean, the kind of idea that you have the power to kill that many people with one order.
Right.
But Donald Trump certainly doesn't have it. And the idea that he is under tremendous stress, that he is, you know, feeling like he has got to do something to kind of prove himself, and that all of this, the various dynamics that are kind of unfolding around him right now, with his hand on the nuclear button, I got to tell you, this is the thing is just keeping me up at night, and it should be keeping everybody up at night. It's and what Ellsberg said, and I think this is really true, is that the system itself that would allow this to happen is the real problem.
Right.
That no man should have, no person should have that capability. But, you know, John F. Kennedy wasn't an idiot like Trump is, but even he came very, very close
right.
to making a major error. This guy, oh my God, you know. So anyway.
It's scary. It's super scary. Now, look, we just have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to just touch on this because I know, I mean, it just sort of shows you like the, how much oxygen Donald Trump sucks up. But there was a video, and we didn't end up showing it. I mean, we were looking at it at the beginning of this week. There was a video released. Maybe it was on Friday, but I think it was maybe at the beginning of, maybe it might have been a week ago. Video released a week ago that came at the end of a process. A shooting that took place in, I think it was Arizona, in Mesa, and a video that was a body cam. Some cops came in. Apparently the story was this. A man, Daniel Shaver, was staying at a hotel and apparently trying to impress a woman, I guess, that he met there. I'm not quite clear on what the how she was there, but... And he was impressing her with these pellet guns because he was a pest control guy. And he was showing her these pellet guns in his hotel room. And apparently, like, somebody saw through the window this guy with these guns. And Arizona's an open carry state, which also makes this just absolutely bizarre. So the cops came in. The video is, well, let's play a little bit of the video. I don't want to play the whole thing. It's just too disturbing. But they have them come out into the hallway. The cops think that maybe there's somebody else in the room or that maybe they have more weapons. But just listen to the way the cop is talking to this guy. And people should also know that this cop has an AR-15 that turns out to be his personal rifle that he brings with him on... In these situations, it has been personalized with an etching on the rifle that says, "You're fucked," is written on the rifle. And so here, listen to what's going on here.
I didn't say that the conversation. Hands up in the air!
Okay, so pause it for 1 second. So what's happening is the guy is lying on the floor about 10, 15 feet in front of them on this hotel hallway. He is, I think, maybe a little drunk, but he's raising his hands. They want him to cross his legs, and then they ask him to start crawling towards them. And they, you know, it's... He's just saying, please don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me. And at one point he goes to reach to his, pull his pants up and they fire. Just play a little bit more of it. Just so we get a sense of like, just how buffy these guys think they are.
We're shooting you. Do you understand?
Please do not shoot me.
Then listen to my instructions.
I'm trying to do what you...
Don't talk. Listen. Hands straight up in the air. Do not put your hands down for any reason. You think you're going to fall, you better fall on your face. Your hands go back in the small of your back or down. We are going to shoot you. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir.
Crawl towards me.
And he tries to call towards him, but of course he's been told to have his hands up in the air. I mean, it's this is like a like some type of like weird game of Twister, and ends with this guy firing at him with the AR-15 and killing him. So this video is released the day after the cop is found not guilty of second degree murder, also not guilty of reckless manslaughter. And the cop says, I would do it again. This is just like, I mean, I know you wrote about this, you know, during the Obama years, and you were talking about particularly the use of tasers and the general sort of like militarization of the police force. But this is, I mean, this is stunning stuff, and it doesn't get any attention.
I know. I mean, this is one of the most disturbing videos I've ever seen. It's a snuff film, essentially. And the horrifying thing is, if you put yourself in the position of this guy, first of all, he was unarmed. He didn't have any guns on him, which they found out after they killed him. But he is trying desperately to comply with everything this cop is screaming at him to do. Much of it seems contradictory. I don't think I, sober as I am right now, could necessarily understand what it was he was trying to get me to do. But, you know, he's trying to comply, and it didn't matter. This cop appeared to be hysterical and out of control. I shouldn't even say that. Not out of control. It was as if he was shouting from a script that was incoherent. But it had a robotic quality to it, which was just, you know, you will do this. And, of course, the sheer dominant bullying side of this is
right.
Also really horrific. There was absolutely no reason. The threat level, there were other cops there. It wasn't like the cop was by himself. There were a lot of people there. There was no way that should ever be considered a logical way to defuse a situation like this. It was completely outrageous, very, very upsetting. And for me, this is really hard. Like you said, I covered this stuff a lot. I mean, for years I was documenting tasering, which is another issue with police torturing innocent citizens to get them to comply, very often in confusing ways where, you know, you're a citizen, you're trying to comply, but you can't understand what the police officer is telling you to do. And very often it isn't clear what they're doing. And when you don't comply, they torture you with electric shock. That's a really sick and twisted thing. But, most of the time, tasers can be fatal, and they've killed a lot of people, but most of the time they don't kill you. This, with the gunshots, you know, just drilling somebody who is attempting to comply is absolutely horrifying. And it is this is the militarization of the police. This guy, I had to go and look when I saw him, going, where did this happen? It was in the hotel room hallway. And I'm going, where was this? It was Mesa, Arizona, not Fallujah, you know. And that is the way that they are trained now to respond, and we're also apparently training our population to accept this.
Yes.
Because this guy did not suffer any penalties. He arrogantly strutted around afterwards saying, yeah, and I'd do it again. And he's out there. I mean, and how many other cops, what happens to other cops who saw that and went, well, you know, I guess that's okay. We can do that. And plenty of citizens defended the guy. And I'm appalled, and it's just yet one more little step toward our new authoritarian America.
Yeah, you know? It's extremely disturbing, and the, you know, the techniques and the sort of, I guess, room to maneuver, if you will, or the acceptability of these type of things. In their relations with, I think, minority communities. And, you know, part of this into the mix is this sort of post 9/11 stuff, the militarization. This all is, you know, this is where we're going to start seeing this stuff just seeping in, right? I mean, it's really, I mean, obviously they're not going to do this in the Waldorf Astoria, and they're not going to, you know, shoot somebody in the hallway there. But this is the dynamic, and I'm just struck by how there's no space in our politics anymore because of what's going on. For, I mean, I feel like a couple of years ago, you would hear more from from conservatives who were talking about doing, you know, some type of criminal justice reform. You know, you had guys like Radley Balco, who we had on, years ago to talk about things like this. And to the extent that those voices still exist, they're completely drowned out. I think they're not even out there because we've already seen, like, you know, the Justice Department say, hey, we're, you know, cops have at it. And then
taking off the glove.
DAs get this message. And it's just, you can't, you know, you're not going to have two sets of accountability rules in terms of techniques that cops use. It's like, you know, it's really disturbing. This is just another sort of thing that we look at and we're just like, you know, make a to-do list for when society sort of like, you know, has at least an apparatus to which to respond to this, because no one seems to care about this. Like this is, it's outrageous. And there doesn't, maybe in Mesa, there people are playing it, but like this thing came and went and that was it. Boom. Goodbye.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it is, for those who haven't seen it, if you have the stomach for it, it is one of the most shocking videos you will ever see. I mean, I'm not kidding. Even if you're a pro cop kind of person, this is scary. I have always told people, you know, whatever you do, I mean, I reckon that we all have rights and we should be able to assert them if we're in a confrontation when the police are involved. You know, you feel like you should be able to stand up for the Bill of Rights. Don't. You know, the police are armed. They have all the power in that situation. Just comply with what they're saying, and then later you can go to court and you have a lawyer and do whatever. I've always said that. That's just common sense, you know, street logic. This guy was complying.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. Didn't matter. And that absolutely floored me. I'm going, so this is where we are now. They can murder you, even when you're doing everything you're supposed to do, even when you are unarmed. They can, and begging for your life, as he was, please don't shoot me. He was crying and begging. The cop shot him and got away with it. Okay, you know, where does that puts us in a whole new level? And, you know, I don't know if this is happening elsewhere in the country, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
Certainly African-Americans know this stuff is happening all the time.
Heather Parton, Digby, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, folks, and when we come back, what's that? Steam it. Yes. Oh, yeah. Just a reminder, folks, or I should maybe say as an announcement, if you enjoy watching our videos, you should check out Steam It. It is a new video platform. It's actually, I guess, a platform where you can publish all sorts of things. We publish our videos there. And it's fascinating. We make our revenue not through advertising, but through people just watching it. And you get more. It's all blockchain technology. And I'm still, frankly, to be honest with you, trying to figure out exactly how your technology is built. I mean, how your value is built as a viewer. So the more you view and the more you vote and upvote or comment on things on Steam It, the more value your commenting and viewing has the next time you view or comment on something. And so you're almost, it's like, I think, and maybe it's exactly the same process, but when they mine for like Bitcoins and they have all this, it involves a tremendous amount of computing power. And each time you view something, you're creating more value. I don't fully understand how it works, but it's fascinating and it's an interesting. So if you are into things like cryptocurrencies in particular, check out Steam It and go over and watch some of our videos. Apparently we have some fans over there, so it's been good. And any way that we can make revenue, folks, that is not contingent upon corporations or advertisement, outside sources that could change, you know, Amazon decides to cancel a link or YouTube decides like, hey, we're not going to monetize your videos. In any way that we can put it in the hands of our viewers or our audience, it is extremely helpful to us, not just from making revenue, but also from being unassailable for what we say and do on this program, which is, it's a good place to be. All right, we're going to take a break and get to Judy Gold. We'll go to Judy first, and then when we come back, we'll... all right, so quick break. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I am so glad we're getting towards the end of 2017. Next Friday will be our last live show of the year. I am so glad we're going to have one more opportunity to talk to our next guest in this year, who has made it really, frankly, Judy Gold. I feel like... I don't know. You have been such a big part of why I feel like I'm still standing, just in being able to deal with this stuff. Because, however
no,
many,
how much you know you for me? Because I get to text you and go, "What the fuck is going on? What the fuck? When is this going to fucking end?" And so you know, misery. I mean, I just knowing that I'm not crazy. I mean, I am crazy, but not you know that kind of crazy. Knowing that. That this is fucking unbelievable and that, you know, other people feel the same way. You know, that's what helps. I think that's what helps. You know? Wait, hold on. Omarosa's crying. It's okay, honey. It's okay. Hold on. Omarosa, just sit back. Lean back. You want some tea?
Yeah, it's so sweet of you to be taking care of Omarosa right now. That is very nice.
I have black tea. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I meant African American tea. I'm sorry. Come on, sit back.
I don't think she would be bothered by that.
No, she's she doesn't.
Black tea?
No,
yeah,
she. Oh, in fact, we have a video.
Clip.
Yeah,
we have a clip.
We have a clip. I'm glad you said that because here she's going to explain that about Donald Trump. We think he might be racist. He's not racist. He's Ray Scholl.
Oh, he isn't?
No, he's Ray Scholl.
God.
Yeah, I'm going to let Omarosa explain it to you.
Oh, good. Okay.
Donald
okay,
Trump
go ahead.
Is racial, but he is not a racist. The things that he says, the types of pushback that he gives involve people of color. These are racial exchanges. Yes, I will acknowledge many of the exchanges, particularly in the last 6 months.
Hold on, pause it for 1 second. So you see what she's saying?
Wait.
That he pushes back against black people, and so it's racial. It's a racial
right.
exchange because it's
right.
he's white and they're black, but it's not racist.
Right.
Hey, you low IQ athlete, let me get racial with you.
Right.
I'm sorry. I just. You know, I'm kneeling right now, and my knee hurts. Wait, can someone, Omarosa, can you help me out, sweetie? Yeah, he's racial.
Not racist. Here, listen. But in the past 6 months, things have gotten a little bit more intense. Not prior to that, but the last 6 months. Here we go.
Wait, hold on. There's my black. Come here, honey.
Play.
Many of the exchanges, particularly in the last 6 months, have been racially charged. Do we then just stop and label him as a racist? No.
But yet the president said there were fine people in that crowd and there were bad folks on either side.
Yeah, and I know
that. Did
that
concern you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Omarosa is really setting up her book. When's her book come out?
I don't know, but it's called Racial. That's what it's called. Racial. It's coming out. According to Robin Roberts, she'll be making some money. How fucking much do you love Robin Roberts?
Is she the one who said, bye, Felicia?
Goodbye, yeah. Felicia. Yep. And then Omarosa is... wants to start a black woman civil war over that.
Yep. Sounds like Judy's getting racial.
Yeah. Do you need a blanket, honey? Okay.
How did you connect with
Omarosa? You know what I'll tell you makes me feel good about this is that I'll tell you what. She thinks she's going to go out and make this and write this big book that is going to get, and she's going to sell this book. And when I look at Sean Spicer, who is now relegated to like maybe picking up like a Fox News contributorship, which he definitely thought when he left, he thought, oh, I'm going to make it big.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's going nowhere, too. I think like nobody.
Oh, she's done. No one fucking gives a shit about you. Listen, fuckhead. See, you thought he had so much power and that he was going to help you with your constituents and get all your policies done. He's a fucking idiot, and everyone knows it, and you're a fucking idiot for standing by him, and no one's ever going to fucking forget it, you motherfuckers. You thought, let me just wait because, you know, he has his base. Fuck you. Go fuck yourself. Look how did he have, I mean, fucking Roy Moore, like, quoting the Bible. God hates you, Roy. Jesus Christ hates your guts. He doesn't hate anyone, but I'm pretty sure he hates your fucking guts. Sorry.
Imagine if Roy Moore was
very, very
creation,
San Francisco of you.
Sorry.
That's very San Francisco of you, Judy.
How did you connect with Omarosa, Judy? How did you get to know her?
Well, Omarosa and I have been very close because she's... with her work with the UJA, the United Jewish Appeal,
right,
and the Anti-Defamation League.
Does she
so
get
that's
how Semitic?
We got to know each other.
Not anti-Semitic, but Semitic.
Oh no, she's anti-racial.
How excited were you? How excited were you to see Roy Moore lose?
Well, you know what? It was like the biggest Hanukkah fucking present. We're all sitting there, and you know, it's like watching my son's basketball game, you know, and it's like, it's close. And then it was, you know, it gave me so much hope, and it makes me feel like, you know what? I thought I didn't know this country, and I thought, it was sad. I mean, my anger really comes from sadness.
Right.
And, I was so heartbroken. You know, look, we're all activists, you know, and working for equality and for, you know, human rights and living with dignity and to think that these fucking assholes who are like, oh my God, evangelicals don't give a shit if a fucking 32-year-old guy diddles a 14-year-old and can't go to the mall, then I was like, oh my God, this can't happen again. And it's just, it's unbelievable the way it's building and building that, you know what? You don't want black people to vote after church? Fuck you. We're going to find a way to get them to the polls, you know? And, you know, just, I feel like the only good he's doing is bringing us together. I want, you know, I have always said that black women are the strongest people we have. I mean, with the shit they have to go through and the obstacles they have in front of them. You know, look, we can all complain about being women, but we're not African-American women. We don't know what that's like. You know, I don't know what that's like. I know what it's like to be a Jew dyke, or as they call me, you know, a kike dyke, whatever they call me when I was in the South. Anyway, but I know what it's like.
Would you get that when you were in the South?
Oh my God. I was on stage once in the South and someone yelled, the Jews have all the money. And I'm like, Why? If I had all the money, I wouldn't be fucking performing in this shithole, you fucking asshole.
And then the guy said,
"Well, that's not nice." And then, why are you making fun of your own audience?
No, he would say, "I get Jewish." I wouldn't say I'm anti-Jewish.
Right.
I'm getting Jewish.
Yeah, I'm Jewish. I'm Jewish.
Jewish.
You know, that we own the media. We're judicial. We own the, we're all lawyers. I mean, what the fuck is going on? I mean, they're not winning. They're not winning. And he today, did you see his little, you know, outside the plane? Yeah, what question? Yeah. Like, you're a fucking liar. He talked about Hillary's emails again. Like, you're a fucking mental patient.
He said,
he also, you know, we played
a couple of clips. He also said this, according to CNN. I don't want to talk about pardons with Michael Flynn yet. We'll see what happens. Let's see. I can say this. When you look at what's going on with the FBI and Justice Department, people are very, very angry. He is retreating. He's got a macro today, it seems like. And that is, he's repeating it over and over again in every context. And I don't think this guy... This is not a guy who's, you know, a deep, deep thinker. He may have some, this is more of like a tactic.
And it
always feels like he is, you know, Gary Busey was like this too. Like Gary Busey was like, you know, I directed him and you had to just lie to Gary Busey and give him a lie that he could hang on to.
What he needed. So that you could get what you needed.
And
you know, from
I tell this story a couple of times, but on the first day of shooting, I'm with Busey. We were in Arizona, I think it was, on like surrounded by these, you know, whatever I can't remember what they call them. You know, like they're mountains, but they're like they're like hills, but the rock formations, whatever it is. And
got it.
We can't shoot here. This place isn't right. And I just said to Gary, well, you know, this used to be an organic garlic field because of the power that was coming from one of those things. Word that people are throwing around out there, and that's why this is the only place you can grow organic garlic for 300 miles from here. And it was nonsense. And he's just like,
wait, how did you think of that?
I just went up and told him a lie. I mean, because he was just going around like he was, you know, the guy was always about like spirituality that day, whatever, because he was, you know, he's high or whatever it was. And he goes, all right, this is where we're shooting. This is where we're shooting because there's garlic. I mean, he had no idea. He just needed something to just pretend there was a reason. And I feel like...
I get that. But the fact that you go in, that your job is, I'm going to go brief the president, but only say positive things and... not bring up this and not bring up that because he might have a fit. It's like, when the fuck are people going to stand up and say this guy is, you know, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Nazi? Let me tell you something. He is unfit to be president. He is unfit. He is not fit to be the president of the United States. And these fucking idiots who, I mean, like, Graham, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, he's got to kill hundreds of thousands of people in
He has priorities. He has priorities like becoming Secretary of State and endless wars.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Orrin Hatch?
Are you serious? Look at him.
What the fuck is going on with him? He's the greatest president I've ever served under. You're a fucking liar, asshole. You're full of shit.
But maybe he is, Judy. They share the same politics. Orrin Hatch wants to have a tax bill that guts the safety net. He wants to get rid of environmental protections. They're doing a event in Utah together where they're celebrating, I think it's making a national park in Utah smaller so that there can be more like energy exploration on it. And Orrin Hatch is like personally there to thank him. I mean, there's no daylight other than he's obviously got all these distinct personality disorders, but they have the same agenda.
Right. Okay. It's it's wrong. Orrin Hatch is 80 years old. He's obviously losing it. And he doesn't give a shit about the world his grandkids fucking grow up in. Like, you're a selfish prick. Fuck you. Fuck your money. You know, Alaska is turning into water. You're a fucking idiot. You don't believe in science. You're in you know, it's, I mean, we were the greatest country in the world. People looked up to us. And now all you do, you see someone from another country, they're like, what happened? Why did you vote for him? I'm like, I didn't vote for him. I mean, it's like, it's embarrassing. And you stand behind him. We all know. Everyone there knows he is mentally ill. He is unfit to be the president of the United States. He is dumb. He is narcissistic. I have a bigger vocabulary, and I say fuck every other word.
I mean, there. I don't think we undo the damage, at least in terms of foreign policy, for a generation or two, maybe. I mean, I just think that, like, you know, we're leaving things so untethered, I think, on some level.
I mean, so much work has been done, and he's like, no, we're not going to do that. You don't even understand it, you fucking idiot. You give him a map and tell him to point out the Middle East and where each country is. Go.
Maybe if it was a hotel themed map.
What do you think about that? About moving the, I mean, I guess this happened this week, right? Or last week?
Right.
I can't even remember.
The embassy.
Yeah.
I have so many Jewish, isn't it great? Isn't it family? It should be. And I'm like, look, I know what I know about the Middle East. I know that most embassies are in the capital. I know that moving it to Jerusalem is going to hurt a two-state solution, you know, any sort of two-state solution. I've been there. I don't live there. I do think Israel gets a bad rap in the media a lot of the time. I think Israel has contributed a lot to the world as far as, you know, Nobel Prizes, medical, engineering, the arts, your fucking cell phone, you know.
21st
so
century
much.
Apartheid. Sorts of stuff.
They've updated apartheid. That's nice.
Apartheid 2.0. We're doing
apart,
this.
Apart racial. I am.
Apart racial.
Israel. Yeah. So I think it's a very complicated issue.
It used to be.
I don't think that needed to be done. No.
It used to be that in
absolutely
the Jim Crow
not.
South, you could only make sure that the black, they didn't thrive on the world. But now we can do this with our cell phone chips. We make sure the Palestinians. It's very innovative. We never get credit for this.
We've completely disrupted market.
We've disrupted the racial apartheid market completely, but no one will give us credit for it.
Well, complete innovation.
The way we deliver
innovation.
When we deliver white phosphorus to Gaza, which has the population density of Queens, we are using the most up-to-date crowdsourced technology. And no one is giving us credit for this.
Nothing.
No credit. If you wanted to know about Trump, you needed to follow Israeli politics. That was the precursor.
Likud. I understand. I do follow Israeli politics, but I have not the most liberal stance on that. So I, avoid talking about it.
There we go.
Thank you, Judy. She's doing good. She is the safe fuck funny comedian, but it's okay. We'll buddy with
you. Know what?
The ways of apartheid.
What about Hamas? Hamas, in their constitution, quote unquote, says get rid of Israel. There should be no Jews. I mean, like, honestly.
Sam, may I respond? May I respond out of character?
Well,
Judy. Yeah. No, because no. They have, first of all, they scrapped that several years ago, so it's not historical.
But they did have it.
They did do it with conviction. And secondly,
they
look, I mean, I mean, look,
the kids, there's no Israel on the map. They don't have, you know.
No, they strapped. Hamas accepted several years ago when they went into a joint agreement with the West Bank leadership, the foundations of a two-state 67 agreement, and they've not engaged in terrorism essentially since they've run Gaza since 2006, I believe. And also, like, you just...
But they just, don't deserve the food.
Exactly. It's just a fundamental... No food. It's just an insane asymmetry. Like, Israel has the power. Listen. Period. I mean, you cannot... There's no equivalency in position there.
If these eight... All right, but here's the thing. I'm a gay, okay? I don't know if you know that.
Whoa.
I would not be able to live freely anywhere else in the Middle East besides Israel. They have a gay pride parade.
And that's awesome. And that makes it translative property. That means that they can have like an endless occupation.
Good there. There is not all bad.
I would agree. It's probably the scary. Best. It's the... there... That is one of the myriad of reasons why you wouldn't want to live in you would want to live in Israel as opposed to, say, Gaza. The other being, there's no electricity in Gaza.
I have talked to gay Palestinians, in fact, and they said, yes, that is a major issue. By the way, very different in the West Bank than Gaza. Yeah. But my first concern is the military occupier that regularly kills us, breaks children's bones, doesn't allow us to have freedom of movement, and has a siege on a little enclosed open air prison that doesn't allow medicine and food in, because as one Israeli minister put it several years ago, we need to put them on a diet. That's a bigger concern for
that
us right
is
now.
Also, we also have an app for that. You see how much the calories. Yeah. It's very good.
They are very lean and very fit before we kill them.
You know, I am not a it's not good. I'm not a fan of Netanyahu. Okay? But, you know, it is complicated. There's so much that we can talk about. And it is going for thousands of years. I mean, what the...
Bottom line, it does not help to have the embassy in Jerusalem. I think that much we can agree on.
And fuck Trump. And I just want you to know, by the way, you guys are making me really want to masturbate right now.
Proceed.
We have a new app that we've developed.
You could masturbate and get a live feed of the Palestinian children that we are killing. The IDF soldiers are shooting them for sport, and you can masturbate while this is happening. It's a new app. Israel is the startup nation.
I ask you first if I can masturbate. I ask first.
All right.
You
know? So
they don't do this if they're Arab. They just do it.
I do want to ask, though, about getting back to the performing in the South. Are you still performing in the South? I mean, what is, like...
Well, I'm actually, just so you know, that was years ago, but I'm going to Atlanta for Christmas. I'm performing, and I have performed in the South, and it's been, you know, because now people know me, so they come to see me, so I'm not getting the haters, you know, who are like, oh, once a comic club, oh, see fucking Big Dyke on stage, you motherfucker. You know, I get, you know, people who are Judy Gold fans, you know, and there's five of them down there.
Well, I mean, I'm curious about is, like, have you noticed any difference in the way the crowds are reacting to people pick up that you're anti-Trump. Have you noticed?
I don't know why. Yes, I have. And actually, can I tell you something?
Yeah, I'm curious
so
about this.
Interesting is that the ones in New York, like I did Birdland the other night. This fancy cabaret room. And I opened with my, you know, I can't fucking deal with Trump bullshit. You know, like I have a few Trump jokes. And, you know, it's so interesting that these very wealthy New Yorkers who know him probably, but who are patrons of the arts, you know, get annoyed with me. It's like,
Do?
And yes! And letter where I said, can I do Trump? And they're like, oh, please, of course. But there are still in New York City, you know, these rich, very wealthy people. It's like,
see how they feel when they can't write off their local and state taxes. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, which is so interesting to me. I open with the Trump thing because it's always what's on my fucking mind. And I always think it's the elephant in the room. Like, can you fucking believe what's going on here? But I've noticed that once I do my any Trump supporter, after I do my first jokes and they realize, you know, oh my God, she really fucking hates him, they can't laugh at the rest of the act. They can't give it up for me. They can't just let it go. You know, they are done. They have no sense of humor. It's like, you hate Trump, then I'm not going to even smile. You know, it's unbelievable. They take themselves like, it's ridiculous. And they just come back with hate. Like, even if there's a well-written joke about him, they can't even, like, they can't appreciate it. It's even the fucking Bush lovers could appreciate his stupid, like, nuclear, what did he used to say? Couldn't say nuclear.
Nuclear.
No.
Nuclear.
Whatever.
That's a hard one.
But you can make fun, you know what I mean? Oh,
you know,
my God.
The aggrievement is what it's all about with Trump voters. I got into it and I think that's never going to go away. There is such a sense of aggrievement that leads to support of Trump. And it's the conservative movement, broadly speaking. The idea that, like, and I, you know, I haven't come across it as much because when Trump won, I got into it with somebody who was writing me email saying that, like, comparing being a conservative or supporter of Trump with people in Russia who were pulled out of their apartments at 3 a.m. and sent to, like, Siberia.
Right.
Like, wait, what? Like, you're equating my criticism of what you're saying with literally being exiled to Siberia?
Right.
Literally being exiled to Siberia, not metaphorically. It's unbelievable to me.
First of all, no one in New York voted for Trump. So right there, you should go, oh my God, they've been living with him their whole life and they fucking hate him. So maybe they know something we don't know. You know, they're so closed-minded. They're so, it's all hate. It all comes back. It's like, you write a great joke, even if I don't agree with you, even if you write a misogynistic, horrible about, you know, a joke, but it's a great joke, I can say, okay, that's horrible, but it's a fucking funny joke. They can't do that. This, you write a joke, even if it's fucking hilarious, like I have that joke about how, you know, he is the only human being who could make American Jews want to move back to Germany. Okay? Thanks for the laughter. Anyway, so I have that joke. And yet, what do they come back with? Fuck you, you dyke, you fuck. You know, that's their defense, you know? You cannot have a conversation with these people.
And then you respond to that.
There's no like, well, I agree with him on this, but I don't. He's unfit. He should not be there. They all know it. All they want to do is pass their fucking bullshit tax thing. They know he's a fucking mental patient, toddler, like, you know, watches TV all day. Lies, lies, and lies. Like, talking about, I didn't, you know, him playing. He fucking criticized Obama for playing golf. This guy's fucking played golf. He's like a fucking idiot. Sorry. I just spit all over my computer. Can't believe this. Everything aside, the guy is not fit to be the president of the United States. Calling him short and fat, you know, the anti-Muslim bullshit, it's like, how much more? Until you realize he is a fucking mentally ill demagogue. What more does he have to do?
Have you noticed the Republican Party seems to be walking back all of that criticism?
I think they want a mentally ill demagogue. The base of the Republican Party would love and does love a mentally ill demagogue.
I'm not even talking the base of the Republican Party. Oh, no. I'm talking the electeds.
Of course.
The electeds
because the
thought
original,
it was a problem.
The original plan's starting to work now.
Exactly. They thought, like, oh, this isn't going the way we thought it was when we didn't get the ACA, but wait a second. It looks like we're going to pass tax reform. Hey, maybe we can get a couple other things. This guy's pretty good.
Right.
I mean, this is a reflection on the Republican Party and the electeds, too. Who are all, you know, because they were all, you know, people need to hold them to account.
Right. But also, they don't care about their constituents. It's like these people are in wheelchairs saying, please, please don't do this. You know, and they're like, sorry, you know, the 21%, the tax, and then, fuck you. I mean, Susan Collins, I can't believe her. I can't.
It's pretty impressive. The deep, dark, fundamental principle of republicanism will play out even in Susan Collins. That's it.
Right. And the fact that this is your party, like, you can criticize the Democrats don't have this and they don't have a leader and I mean, are you fucking kidding me? Who's your fucking leader? Some fucking toddler mental case who hates women. That's who your fucking leader is? I mean, look at his stupid tweets.
You know what? I knew Roy Moore wasn't going to fucking...
You did? Fuck you. You're such a fucking liar. He lies and lies and lies and lies and lies. And you're like, oh, but we should get the tax plan. Fuck you. How dare you put people in danger because of your fucking want to be reelected, you fucking asshole.
How great would it be if we could get Judy to give the official Democratic response to the state of the
Union? Oh, my God. Oh, you know what? Honestly.
That's what we're going to do on
the show.
We're
doing that.
Done. Can you join
us,
please?
Will you do it?
Yes, I'll do whatever you want.
My God.
You know, this guy is fucking dangerous and you don't care because you want a little more money in your fucking bank account. Well, you're a fucking asshole. Okay. That's what you are.
Right. That's the Democratic message for 2018.
Right.
Oh my God. Judy,
I mean,
we're doing that.
We're absolutely doing that. You know what we should do, too, is in the lead up to it, we'll start by playing whatever banal, boring Democratic response they actually put up.
Right.
And we'll slowly fade it out. And it will go from like, we differ in this approach to, you're a fucking asshole. Fuck you.
Wait, I mean, what about the FBI? These people, like, first of all, these people risk their lives. They're public servants. What about journalists who are embedded in you know, these territories where they're killed? They're killed to get
fake
the news to us so that we're informed. Fuck you! You've done nothing for anyone else but you, okay? When have you ever fucking sacrificed something for another person?
Fake. I could be doing a lot of other things, believe me. I could be doing a lot of things.
Fake news. Fuck you. You didn't even invent the term fake news, you asshole.
Fake Bureau of Investigation. That's what they call it.
Like, all right, let's see. The reason I originally endorsed Luther Strange, and his numbers went up mightily, is that I said Roy Moore would not be able to... Read a fucking book! He didn't invite the Democratic Jews to the Hanukkah party! What is your fuck... How old are you? That's like me not getting invited to a girl's bat mitzvah because I'm not fucking popular enough.
There was only so much jelly donuts we had, and I didn't want to share them. That's
Oh my God, don't take it personally, Judy. It's not my fault you're not like popular. Sorry.
Wait,
Richard Blumenthal at your party? Yeah, no thank you. That guy's a total bore.
Don't like him.
Piece of shit.
Don't like
fuck you. Wait, what about what he did to Kristen Gillibrand? Fuck
you.
Begging.
She's a prostitute.
That was, I definitely went for the Obama, like, she would literally do anything. Begging for it.
God. It is unbelievable. Like, what won't a president be able to do in the future?
You know what made it even worse, though? Because I admit, for better or for worse, I'm pretty immune to Trump. Like, no, it's just he's disgusting. And that just is what it is. And you can't let it upset you. And my that's just how I ride it out. But when April Ryan asked, and we Alona and I played this the other day, April Ryan asked Sarah Huckabee, who I think Sarah Huckabee makes me more like Judy than Trump does. Like, there's something just so horrible.
Oh, my God, Sarah Huckabee. She's the,
yes.
She's anyone who says that, their head's in the gutter.
Exactly.
Liar,
explain that, Judy.
Fucking asshole.
I was going to explain that. Explain that to everybody. That was so infuriating.
Judy?
The fact that she... that he wrote that thing, you know, she would do anything. She kept asking, you know, and then you say he's basically saying she was like, I'll give you a fucking blowjob if you give me a donation. That's basically what he said. Okay.
And April Ryan, April Ryan asked Sarah Huckabee, like, the polite version of what you just said, but the obvious question, like, hey, what's he saying about what Christian Dillibrand did? And Sarah Huckabee said, what?
Right. Sarah Huckabee.
Your mind would be in the dirty
mind.
Wouldn't you hate to be, like, in a relationship with her that she can turn everything around? Like, that is such a cunty quality to have.
It's definitely not the really only reason that someone would hate to be in a relationship with her.
Shut the fuck up. Like, you can't have an argument with her. Her kids must be like, you know, oh God, I gotta tell mom this. She's gonna fucking turn that around to make it all about, you know, my fault.
Yeah, I mean, that's her job, but it's also amazing, like, you can't really, I mean, I don't understand why people don't get up and walk out of those briefings.
Right.
Things.
And
like,
it,
just
and
like, you know what? We're
like,
done. We're done here. We've done.
And I really don't think April Ryan should eat that fucking cake. I don't think she's going to eat it, by the way. That fucking pie she made.
I don't know Sarah about this. What happened?
Oh, did Sarah Huckabee make a pie for her? And did to give
Sarah Huckabee made her stupid pies. Okay. And, she gave one to April Ryan.
She was saying a lot of racial stuff while she made that pie. Lots of racial stuff.
Well, we all saw the help and what was in that pie. So I'm not eating that fucking pie. Okay.
Oh man,
Jesus!
I'm not eating anything that Sarah Huckabee is remotely involved with touching in any capacity. I think that's the thing that on some level, the other guy who I don't even remember his name. The last one before Huckabee. What was her name? What was his name?
Scaramouche?
No, not Scaramouche. Not the fun one. The first guy.
Spicer.
I feel like on some as despicable and disgusting, and he should be shunned like everybody else. Part of what his comedic angle, the comedic angle on him, is that there was clearly some part of him that got how disgusting he was and how disgusting the whole thing was. And then Scaramouche is just delusional. And Sarah Huckabee's like, I enjoy being this disgusting.
You get the sense that Spicer would go home at night and do physical things to punish himself.
Yes, that was a bad thing you did. You're ruining the
like,
country.
Honestly, like he like takes some type of, you know, like he grinds his nipples with like some type of like clamp or something like that at night just to cause himself like the pain or something. Get a cigarettes, put it out on his arm. All right, and then we got to go.
All right, I know you got to hang up, but listen.
Yeah.
I'm not like, you know how I am. I'm definitely a feminist, but that fucking eye makeup is, what the fuck is that? Seriously.
She's at the level.
What is that? And she's always looking down at the podium like she's going to like, you know, like she's looking, like she's going to find something there, like the truth, you know? It's like, fuck you. With the fucking eye makeup.
I'm looking into my soul. I'm looking into my soul.
Dark.
Well, actually, I'm sorry. What'd you say? I'm not going to be taking questions on that. Obviously, you know, obviously the president has made made it clear that those women are all liars and he's fucking, you know. So I'm not going to comment on that. But what about the allegation? I'm sorry. I just said to you that I'm not commenting on it. All right. That the president has denied it. The women are all liars. Every woman is a liar. And he is telling the truth. Obviously, he's telling the truth. He always tells the truth. And you people are just making this shit up. Go ahead.
My daddy said growing up, never believe a sexual assault allegation unless it's leveled against a black man. I think that's a principle we're going to need to follow. Look at the makeup.
What is her next job?
Look at look at the makeup accentuating my lazy eye.
I know, I was
eye.
Thinking that too.
Focus
she'll
on
be
it.
On Fox News.
You
know,
think so?
No.
She'll
news.
Go. No, my prediction would be that she'll be head of like comms for some like grotesque agriculture company that nobody even thinks about.
Do
like
you
Tyson
think so?
Foods
like, who is going to hire her after this?
Oh, dude, there's a lot
he
of things.
Sean Spicer's gotten nowhere,
but he's not good.
That's true too.
She is going to be the head of the National Cunt Association of America, NCAA.
Judy, have a great new year. Thank you so much.
Oh my God! I want to come in next time.
You know what? You're coming in for at the very least. We're going to do the State of the Union. But yes, you should come in next time.
All right, because I love you guys. Wait, Dustin Hoffman's here. Hold on.
I'll talk to you later.
What?
You should beat the show.
All right.
I'll talk to you later. Thanks, Judy. Bye.
Bye. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, I feel so much better after talking to her. I feel it's like it's true. Just like I all the rage can get let out.
To the
and
essence.
I don't have to be hoarse at the end of it.
Right. She gets to the essence. Do you think she ever gets hoarse?
I don't know like how she does that, actually.
Man, some people just have vocal cords of steel, you know? She's like Courtney Love.
That is right.
Just want to give you an update on the net neutrality. It was announced yesterday that Eric Schneiderman was going to sue the FCC to preserve net neutrality. There are now, oh God, maybe at least a dozen states who have joined the suit: California, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Iowa, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Mississippi, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Vermont, Virginia, Washington. So you got a couple of red states in there, at least. And we'll see what if they can maybe just get some type of restraining order, you know, kick this can down the road. You know, there was one thing I just wanted to point out too. David Dayen was out there, and I can only imagine what idiots out there are saying, you know, the Democrats, there were two Democrats who voted to okay Ajit Pai as like being chair, or Barack Obama appointed Ajit
you
Pai.
You really want to know the root? Yeah, look at it. Check it out. You want to know the origins of why we got rid of net neutrality? Well, I have a question for you. Why did Barack Obama, a Democrat, a fucking corporate shill Democrat, appoint Ajit Pai to begin with? Maybe it was part of the whole fucking plan.
The way it works with
they rigged the primaries.
Committees
they knew
like
that
this.
Hillary, they knew they rigged the primaries so that then Obama's fake net neutrality would get overturned. They knew it. It's the whole plan.
This is the long con. This is when they talk about Obama's 18-dimensional chess. This is it. When you have a commission that has a minority number, when you have it's an odd number, the tradition has always been, it's not just a tradition, it's so that you can get your committee members in. Obama gets 3 picks, and then McConnell gets 2 picks when they're the opposition party. That way, your people can get seated.
Oh, what a bunch of bullshit. He was president. He could have appointed Jeremy Corbyn to the FCC. But it's just another goddamn right. Corporate sellout that you carry water for over here at mini MSNBC. Now, I'm not saying you should have been fired for that tweet, but I'm not going to pretend that you're some sort of liberal hero. I call into this show every day, and I had no idea you worked at MSNBC. Why was that hidden from me? Now I see why you carry water for Hayes and Rachel and the whole cabal of them just working overtime for war with Russia.
There you go.
Add your pie. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
It's called John from San Antonio.
Oh! Boom.
Nice.
Let's hear it.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody, and a Merry Jesus Christmas, as I like to call it. This song here is from a listener, inspired with a little bit of reefer cake, special frosting on top. This is from Frederick Gardner Bard McNulty. Long enough name there, buddy. But he's the Facebook guy for the Majority Report International Group.
Oh, that's cool.
Right, world.
Oh, Fred McNulty. Yeah, of course.
And here it is. You know Reefer Cake, E. Greg, Josh from Chicago, Fred from Conn College, the Chris Lepaco. But do you recall the most infamous caller of all? John from San Antonio had a lot of fancy polls. Other callers dismissed him. You could even hear eyes roll. Then one foggy Hanukkah night, Sammy came to say, John from San Antonio, I'm giving you your own talk show. Then all the neo-libs loved him. Chris Hayes shouted out with glee.
Always takes a turn.
John from San Antonio, you'll go down in history.
Well, that was
Merry Christmas, everybody.
There you go. All right, a holiday song. I don't. What's he going to do on the 23rd next week? It's not our last.
That's very odd.
Another one.
That was odd.
It was an odd. But I like the shout out to, you know, different callers.
No, that was cool.
I thought
it was going to
be more
extensive. I don't know how you do a song like that without a Ronald Reagan.
I guess you'd
shout
have to
out.
Do, yeah. I guess you'd have to do like an Auld Lang Syne,
right.
Auld Lang Syne for like everybody,
right?
You know, hint, hint. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half of the program, wherein we'll take your calls and your IMs. 646-257-3920. Let's go to the fun half.